Mini episode 744 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 744. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and we have a great segment coming up for you today. We're going to be previewing the 2016 college football season, and doing so as we did a year ago. That would be, of course, with a good friend of ours, longtime guest on the program, Fran Stuckery, a longtime football writer who has written for such outlets as our Sports Central and many, many others, more than I could even possibly name. But of all the people I know who watch football, I don't know that anybody watches more football at more different levels than him. Specifically, we're going to be talking about, again, the college football season today, but this is somebody who watches even at the lower levels of college football and all levels professionally. I do mean all levels. And we had a great preview segment last year, as I knew that we would, and one of the big headlines to come out of that was this show was probably the first time you heard anywhere in America last year, look out for Houston, they are going to be a big sleeper, they will really be making some noise. They of course went all the way to a BCS bowl, and it is because of the prediction of my good friend Fran Stuckery that you got to hear it on this show, and you'll get to hear some more gems about the 2016 season with him. Fran, good to have you back on, my man. How are you today?
Doing great, Rick. Glad to be back. I just want to tell the audience I'm now living in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I don't for 4 months, and I don't have a Southern accent yet.
Well, give it time. You're down there on Tobacco Road, and in the midst of a very, very interesting conference down there with the ACC. But speaking of the ACC, let's go to this, and this is something I saw you posting about today on Facebook. You've got one of the teams from the conference, they'll be playing in the battle at Bristol a couple weeks from now, September 10th, Virginia Tech taking on Tennessee. They've only got about 3 weeks to finish converting the facility for college football. First time ever there for doing a really, really big-time type event other than auto racing, looking to fit 150,000 people in there, which they should be able to do. I understand the allotment to both schools was 40,000 tickets. It's going to be just an absolutely massive type affair. It comes early in what is projected to be a breakout season for Tennessee. So all eyes are going to be on that facility on that one night, just like the Bristol Motor Speedway folks were hoping for.
Well, the thing is, Rick, I mean, it's going to be 150,000 people there, twice the attendance of the Super Bowl this past year. So it's going to be a zoo.
Yep.
It's going to be something that it's going to be – college game day is going to be there, so Lee Corso is going to have some maybe a Tennessee dog or a Hokie headgear prediction or whatever he does. It's going to be a electric atmosphere. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. A lot of people are going to be tuning in. The first week of college football is unbelievable. We have six great games over a span of a couple of days, which will be a lot of fun to watch. And you know, you have Lambeau Field, LSU, Wisconsin. What a great game that's going to be.
Mm-hmm. It could be a very significant year for LSU. They're going to be counting on that game early on, Fran, no question.
The question is, Rick, is Leifert not going to give it a full – is he going to go full throttle, or is he going to – you know, because he's going to be a top pick in the NFL draft next year and make lots of money, or is he going to try to stay injury-free and not get hurt?
There's been no sense whatsoever from him of kind of pulling the throttle back. There have been a lot of people saying that on his behalf, but that is one of the more interesting headlines coming into this season. If you're just looking at it on pure talent, he would have to be considered, I think, the favorite for the Heisman Trophy. He might be the best player at any position, and he's another guy indicative of what I've been seeing as what I think is going to be the return of the bell cow in the NFL. You're already seeing it with Todd Gurley, with Ezekiel Elliott. Fournette's another guy that's going to be able to be a legitimate three-down back in the NFL. And, it's not too soon to start looking ahead to some of the teams that he could go to next year, not least of which a team like the Jets if they have a bad enough year. So he's one of the players that I'm glad you mentioned him because he does stir that kind of absolute excitement, the electricity with the talent that he has.
Well, I think this is the year LSU has a chance to get to the Final Four. They have a chance. I think they will win at Alabama. But if they have a nice, impressive win over Wisconsin and pretty much not a non-home field advantage, it could set the tone for their season.
It really could. And Wisconsin is a team that, again, they've been kind of treading water the last 2 years or so. This is not expected to be much of a season in terms of them making noise. You could say the same for most of the teams in the Western Division of the Big Ten. It looks like all the action, once again, is going to be coming out of the East. And maybe a little bit back to a Big Two instead of a Big Three, because it kind of looks like a retooling year for Sparty. Maybe not necessarily rebuilding, because they're still one of the best teams by far in the conference. But most of the conversation seems to be coming down to OSU, Michigan, now that we've finally got our Woody and Bo of the 21st century, legitimately there with Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh. It could come down to that game in Columbus to settle who is going to go ultimately to the Big Ten championship game and then probably to the playoff. But there's also a scenario when you look at the regular season that Ohio State has and you throw Oklahoma into the mix, it's possible Michigan could be a game or two ahead of Ohio State, lose that game to Ohio State, and still go on.
Yeah, and the thing is, Rick, I'm not big on the Michigan hype because they still have three tough road games this year. They have at Iowa, at Michigan State, and at Ohio State. So I don't know why everyone's jumping on the Jim Harbaugh bandwagon with those three tough games.
I think looking at the caliber of recruiting that he's been doing so far, and obviously, as you said, projecting an awful lot, projecting a lot of improvement, and that some of the holes that we saw in year one are going to be filled in year two, the excitement of having a guy like Peppers on defense, who I understand are going to be moving around even more than last year. So there is an awful lot of projection going on here, Fran, much as there is with some of the other teams we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, I mean, but it's definitely going to be a fun season. Let's start off with the I think Ohio State's going to be the team to beat in the Big Ten. People think they're down, but I think they will be the team to beat. I'm not on the Michigan hype yet. You have to prove it to me first.
Well, I have to tell you, I was kind of surprised when some of the earlier polls came out and you could see Ohio State and some of them as high as fourth or fifth or sixth. And I've really just kind of found that interesting, but I'm guessing what people are looking at, and maybe to a certain extent you as well, is you start getting into the whole, well, compared to what? Because when you look at the rest of the Big Ten, particularly if you don't believe that Michigan is going to step up, we know that Sparty is going to kind of take at least a little bit of a step back this year. May still be distantly in the conversation, but not as central as they've been the last several years. Nobody in the West that really puts a scare into you. So is that kind of what it is? And Penn State, by the way, another team that's had nice recruiting over a period of time that hasn't been able to really kind of congeal the way that you thought that they might by this point in time. So is that what accounts for a lot of people being on Ohio State, notwithstanding what's expected to be sort of a rebuilding or retooling year?
Well, I kind of think that people think when push comes to shove, Ohio State will win the games they have to win. I think they will beat Oklahoma when they play them later in a couple weeks into the season.
Ooh.
And the other thing is I think they're going to beat them. I think they will win. I think Ohio State's going to win that game. And also with Penn State, if Penn State doesn't have a good year this year, James Franklin could be fired. He could be on the hot seat. He could be gone because there's high expectations with his team. And he may not be the right. He may be a good fit for another program, but Penn State may not be the type of fit for the type of team he can utilize and the program he wants.
Yeah, they're still really kind of struggling to find who's going to be the next big coach down there post Paterno. Bill O'Brien used it for a launching pad successfully to the NFL. Franklin, because of his previous success at recruiting, his roots in Western Pennsylvania, a lot of people thought it was going to work out. But, yeah, it really hasn't come close in the last couple of years here. When you talk about a two-team race in the Big Ten that a lot of people are seeing could be the case between Ohio State and Michigan, to a certain extent, right down there where you're at on Tobacco Road, it seems to be the case in the mind of a lot of people with the ACC. Florida State, Clemson, obviously when they play, the stakes in that game are going to be ginormous, as they so often are. You're looking at the two teams that have been representing the ACC playing for championships the last couple of years. So what does that say about other teams more distantly in the mix, like North Carolina, Miami now in what should be a transitional year with Mark Richt coming down there. There's other teams that might think that they have something to say about it, but is it as cut and dried as Florida State and Clemson at the end of the day when you're looking at who goes to the playoff?
I think it pretty much is, with Florida State and Clemson, because they are the two elite teams. They have the most talent. And that game they play will decide who wins that division. And also with North Carolina is talented, but I think Georgia's going to beat them the first game. That's a home game for them in Atlanta. And the thing is, North Carolina also, I mean, people are not talking about, they have two FCS games on the schedule again. And they remember, I mean, they got torched for 700 yards in that bowl loss to Baylor. So, I mean, I just don't know. I don't know if the quality of schedule is there. I mean, maybe, yeah, sure, they'll beat NC State and Duke, but I'm just not sure if they have enough of a quality of a schedule that people are going to take them seriously with two FCS teams on that schedule again.
Yeah, that's always going to be an impediment to being taken seriously, and that's where supposedly schools are going to be looking at that a lot more in the years to come in terms of not wanting to be disqualified from getting to some of the bigger spots in the college football playoff, potentially in those major bowl games.
It's not their problem because a team's backed out, but still, they couldn't find anyone else to fill in those slots.
Sure. Yeah, sometimes you're a victim of circumstances, but I know particularly in the Big Ten, there's been a move away from scheduling the lower division schools, and that's a move that's probably going to pick up steam across college football in the years to come as schools have been made an example out of for their schedule, which actually is a perfect transition to what I wanted to get into next, because one of the schools that's kind of been dinged by the committee a little bit in recent years has been Baylor. And they're a team that, again, a lot of people thought coming out of last season were going to be a strong, at least co-favorite to come out of the Big 12 this year. And all of a sudden, with the collapse of the Briles administration there in Waco due to this scandal and I guess a series of scandals that the coach is being dinged for failing to properly cover for and account for, Oklahoma to me looks like the surest pick out of any conference. If you're going to say give me one team that you think is going to make the college football playoff, I might say Oklahoma just because of that. Now, your opinion of Oklahoma may not be as high if you don't have them getting by Ohio State, but when you look at the Big 12 conference and the grenade that was thrown into it by the very shocking Art Briles resignation, what do you see?
Well, I think Oklahoma is going to win the Big 12. I mean, they can still lose Ohio State and still be making top four, depending on what
yes.
happens. But the thing is, the other teams just aren't there. I mean, Texas, if they don't have a good year this year, I mean, how much leniency is Charlie Strong going to have? How much leniency? When's he not going to get fired? Because they have such high expectations there, and the people in Texas want a winner. The Notre Dame game, that's a huge game for them week one. It's another great game on a Sunday night that people will be watching.
It absolutely will be, no question about it. And I know that this, from communicating with you off air, this Art Briles situation has you in mind of some past precedents. So there's a name that you threw out to me that I thought was very well considered about when you're talking about such a supremely talented coach, one with turnaround ability such as his, but some of the volatility that also seems to come with it.
Yeah, well, I compared the situation with Art Briles to Bobby Petrino. Bobby Petrino had an affair with a 25-year-old student. Embarrassed the school when he got into that motorcycle accident. Embarrassed the university, shamed his family, and surprisingly, his wife stood by him and didn't divorce him, which amazes me. Because if I was in that situation, I would have told him if you want that, go get that. Or as our wrestling fans would say, with demented Matt Hardy would say, you are deleted, Bobby Petrino.
Anytime we can get a broken Matt Hardy reference in, it's a quality day. I don't understand that whole dynamic either, but Petrino getting a second chance, not just from the misses, but at Louisville, a school which, again, a lot of people think he kind of did them dirty by the circumstances of when he left. A lot of people thought there was duplicity involved with that. So he's come back. He's survived. He's carving out a niche for himself again. With somebody with the talent of an Art Briles, again, particularly, and as you pointed out to me off air, without the show cause penalty being attached to him, which is poison, at some point, maybe even in another year, he's going to look very attractive to somebody who I'd say particularly is looking for a turnaround specialist.
Well, I think you would think it would just be a Sun Belt school, but I think a better program will take a chance on him and bring him in, because simply, I mean, there's no sanctions against him. There's no penalties. There's nothing. There's not anything against him. And people know that, yeah, I mean, maybe a team doesn't want to be the first team to bring him in, but somebody's going to bring him in, and they're going to recruit tons of players. They're going to have a high power offense. They're going to be scoring 60 points a game. It could be a program that wants to be revitalized. It could be a team that's been losing for such a long time that's just tired of losing. So we'll have to see what happens. But I think he will be coaching next year.
I think you're right about that, and it's fascinating to consider the programs that might consider taking a chance on him. And when you look at coaches that could be potentially on the hot seat this year, you look at something like this. I would think that somebody like Penn State would be probably pretty risk-averse at this point in time, but, you know, that seems like a classic example right there, that if they weren't in a situation where they're not in a position to take a chance on somebody, they might be inclined to maybe swing from the heels on that one.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see what happens over. Let's be honest. I mean, they give you some other coaches in hot seats, but it may be a low-profile school. We'll have to see what happens. And speaking of a coach in hot seat, Kevin Sumlin, if he doesn't win 9 games this year, he may be fired out of a job in Texas A&M.
Yeah, he may be bringing down the necks of a few different coaches this year, Art Briles might, in terms of some of the possibilities out there. And a school where there's always a lot of hot seats to go around is the SEC. And this is one where I think the only way to do it any justice is to probably go by division here. Starting first with the East, you've got my Tennessee Vols. I've been a fan of them for a long time. They seem to be a big favorite on paper. But again, sort of in the Michigan mold as far as people are saying, okay, it's time for them to step up. It seems to be more on projection than anything else, because the team lost a lot of close games last year and didn't look like they were necessarily ready for prime time yet. You've got an interesting transitional time. I think that's why a lot of people are looking at Tennessee, because you've got other schools that are going to be making noise that may not make as much in 2016. You got Kirby Smart in at Georgia, which, again, recruiting-wise, you know that that's going to pack a powerful punch. How he is on the sidelines, yet to be seen. You got Florida. They've got their quarterback quandary sort of continuing, as it has been since the middle of last season. So there's the thought about what are they going to be able to do to kind of overcome that. You've got Will Muschamp now in at South Carolina. So that's an interesting wrinkle to it as well. Again, a program not necessarily on the verge of making noise right now, but bringing in Muschamp to try to, there's that term again, swing from the fences, try to get a high-profile guy in there to do it. Because of some of these other questions, that seems to be why people are deferring to Tennessee. And when you look at the recruiting classes of the last couple of years and just the sheer amount of talent and upper-class talent on that team, it's very understandable on paper. They're a team that I can see, quite frankly, going to the playoff, but I know a lot of people might consider that to be a lot of projection. You might consider that to be a lot of projection, Fran.
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, some people are projecting them to go like 11-1, but let's see them beat their arch nemesis, Florida. Let's see them win a game they should win at Virginia Tech and in Bristol. Let's see them beat Alabama. Let's see them, because last year they should have beat Oklahoma, and they blew that. No, and Stanford would have been in the Final Four instead of Oklahoma. So let's see them do it first. Let's see them win these games that they're supposed to win and not lose the teams that are cakewalks.
Yeah, they have a lot to prove in that regard, and this is the first time I think there's been any kind of real big-time heat, big-time expectations on Butch Jones. He's been a guy who's been, again, a turnaround – well, not exactly a turnaround specialist, a maintenance specialist, I guess you'd say, at his previous jobs. Always coming in behind Brian Kelly, doing a strong job of keeping things going. Tennessee's where he had to kind of do a little bit of a turnaround, and there wasn't really any expectations until last year. And that's the thing, friend. The expectations weren't at this level, but they were somewhat substantial going into last year. They were expected to look better than they did, and this string of just close losses and, you know, thoughts about do they have the ability to close, it'll be interesting to see how much that stays in their head. If they don't have a lot of demons from 2015, then they could be very formidable.
I think they can be very formidable. I mean, they could be in the SEC championship against. I think LSU is going to win that division, because I think they're going to beat Alabama this year. Finally, get the monkey off that back and beat Alabama at home this year in that big SEC matchup.
Well, yeah, let's talk about the West, because that game right there, it's a situation where, as is always the case with the dominance of Alabama in the SEC, and it seems to be even more concentrated, of course, in the division in the SEC West, the ability to put heat on these other programs. Auburn has gone through this a couple of different times in the last decade or so, periods of mounting frustration with losses to Alabama, and that's with Auburn going to the national championship game and winning the national championship on separate occasions in the last decade. They're still not immune to that. LSU, for all the excellence that they've had in the last 15 years, Les Miles sometimes playing footsie with the Michigan job or being mentioned for other things, the shoe was on the other foot. The administration almost bounced him late last season. So it's a questionable dynamic a lot of times. When a coach looks into the abyss, a lot of times they tend not to survive long term. But you must think it's going to go fairly well in the short term if you think they're going to get past Alabama, who's got a little bit of their own retooling to do, especially on offense.
Yeah, I think this is finally a year LSU can finally – have all the pieces together and get to the SEC championship and make and get back to the Final Four. I'll be honest with you, Rick. I'm getting tired of Alabama every year. Hopefully this year, you know, they step back a little bit. They've lost some talent. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, it's just always the same old down there from Nick Saban. They're really just sort of a machine type situation of just plugging guys in and getting results. Again, he's going to be challenged in different ways, not having Kirby Smart out there on the recruiting trail with him anymore, but those types of things, they've survived them in the past. When I'm looking at the power conferences here, the Power Five in college football, the one to me that seems the most wide open coming into this year is the Pac-12, because you've got sort of the same thing as, again, with Tennessee and Michigan, of where people are saying they're about to turn the corner, and that would, of course, be Washington with Chris Peterson in year three. A lot of people think that they could be on the verge of taking that step. But you've got USC and UCLA. They've been always in the mix the last couple of years here and should be in that conversation again. Stanford and Oregon, they're sort of the perennials in this conversation over the last decade, albeit they don't look particularly strong this year, but they look like they're at least in that mix. So to me, they might be the most interesting conference. How do you see it playing out?
And it's a wide open, interesting conference. But the thing is, Stanford – yeah, they were good last year. They were on the verge of getting to the Final Four. But the thing is, they're losing their quarterback, and it's just all going to be based on McCaffrey, if he can carry a team and run like crazy and win the Heisman. I think UCLA is going to win that. I think UCLA is going to be the best team in that division. The coaches recruited a lot of talent. I like the system in place. I think they're a team to beat in the Pac-12.
Very, very interesting, because They've been in position a couple of times in recent years to where they might be a game or two away from that point. And there's been thoughts about, what's going to happen first, UCLA making the playoff or Jim Mora Jr. Succumbing to the NFL temptation once again. So you obviously must think that them making the playoff is going to come before Jim Mora possibly leaving them behind.
Yeah, I think this is the best chance they're going to have. I mean, Washington, all the hype and hoopla, but like I say, I want them to prove it to me. I want them to see them win big games. I want them to follow through on that first before I take them seriously.
And that makes sense. The analytics are high on them, as they are Tennessee and to whatever extent Michigan, because particularly in the cases of Washington and Tennessee, the computers, when they're looking at it, don't tend to penalize you much for close losses. But, actually doing it, getting it done on the field would be really something. And, again, Washington, they're one of these national powers that we really kind of sleep on, I guess because it's been a while. But when I grew up, it was the days of Don James, and Washington was always a program that you had to account for. And that's why I think the Chris Peterson hiring from a couple of years ago really kind of raised my eyebrows, because that to me was a guy that could have had a job even bigger than where Washington was at the time. But he embraced the task of trying to, and you could make a strong case that at that point in time, the Boise State was more of a national presence than Washington even. But embracing trying to get them back to where they were under Don James, I sort of liken that to Shaka Smart taking the Texas coaching job in college basketball when seemingly he could have had a better job on paper. But sometimes you just look to embrace the challenge and Chris Peterson, whether they do it in 2016 or not, I got to like his odds of turning this program around and really kind of instituting the kind of success he had at Boise State going beyond this season, I would think.
Well, I think he will, because he has a history of success. They have an exciting offense. They have a well-committed recruiting class. They're bringing in great players. Everybody wants to play in Washington now all of a sudden. He's revitalized the program, and eventually they will win a Pac-12 championship. I don't know if it's this year or next year. Eventually they will be playing in the Pac-12 championship. But since you mentioned Boise, let's talk about the Mountain West. This is where where things get a little bit interesting. Rick, there's a possibility at the end of the season you can have two undefeated teams playing each other in the Mountain West Championship. Boise State can go 12-0, and a team I like, this is my sleeper team, San Diego State. They won 10 straight games last year, and when I told my friends, I don't bet on games, but I told them, bet them to beat Cincinnati in the Hawaii Bowl, and they won 42-7. They won convincingly. They have a home game against California, and a road game in Northern Illinois. If they win both of those games, it's a possibility both of those teams, I don't know if it could go, both go undefeated and play in the Mountain West Championship for a possible Final Four if they both go undefeated. If Boise State goes undefeated, they have a chance because of their reputation. So it just depends on how many other teams lose at that point.
Well, yeah, and if you have a situation where a couple of conferences have two lost champions coming out, if you have a situation like that in the Big Ten where Ohio State or Michigan, for example, would have two losses, that's not as likely, I think, in the ACC between Florida State and Clemson. But whoever comes out of the Pac-12 could have two, maybe even three losses on their record. So when you start looking at how do they infiltrate the Final Four, you know, those scenarios are right there in front of you, Fran, the possibility for them getting in there, because if you're a two-loss champion of a major conference, how do you make the case that you should be in over Boise State? I think that would be a tough argument. Perhaps even San Diego State, if they can maintain enough momentum and respect from what they did last year.
Yeah, that's the way I feel. If it's a two-loss team, it's going to be tough. But these teams are undefeated. Believe me, there's going to be a lot of hype. There's going to be a lot of things going on, and that Mountain West Conference Championship game could be a game everyone's going to be watching if that plays out. But let's see what happens. But the thing is, Donnie Pumphrey, the running back, no one's talking about. He's similar to Marshall Faulk. The guy's a speed demon. He had 1,700 yards last year, 20 total touchdowns. He's a guy that the nation has not really spoken about, and watch out for him this year.
And that's, again, just kind of uncanny to have another Marshall Faulk-type player coming out of there. And, again, San Diego State, they were on my list of teams I was going to ask you about, as well as Boise State. You, of course, called it a year ago with Houston that they were going to be the breakout team of the mid-majors, and they were. A couple other teams here that I was kind of eyeballing as well, USF, Cincinnati. Do you really think it's going to come down to just Boise State and San Diego State, or does somebody else have a chance to get into the conversation for that spot?
Well, it's hard to tell, because if Houston goes undefeated, they're going to be in the final, they're going to be in the top four, because they'll have wins over Oklahoma and Louisville. I can't see how you can not put them in the final four if they finish undefeated. I don't see how that's possible. The other conferences, they're going to have too many losses. Like Western Michigan, I think they're the best team in the MAC. PJ Fleck should get another head coaching job, but the school loves him. They pay him a lot of money, and unless the Big Ten school opens up and wants him, I see PJ Fleck staying in Western Michigan for the indefinite future.
That's right, and you'd have to think that it would be kind of a plum Big Ten job at that, right? Because I don't know that if it necessarily was an Indiana or a Purdue or somebody. Somebody like him, he could be holding out for something the caliber of a Wisconsin job at this point, I would think.
Yeah, I think he's talented, but I think kind of like, first, recruiting major, it has to be a Midwest school. I don't see him going someplace else in the South or in the East and bringing his style of football and recruiting to that area. So it's either he gets a job at a Big Ten school, or he stays there for another 10 years.
Well, yeah, and that's when you look at it, it's hard to do. It's hard to transplant what works for you a lot of times to another part of the country. A lot of people were kind of dubious when Brett Bielema went from Wisconsin to Arkansas, and that might have had to do more with the situation he was leaving behind and looking for an escape hatch at that point in time. A lot of people kind of questioned, how's that going to play in the SEC? And it's kind of telling that this is the first that we're talking about Arkansas here. When we were talking about the SEC West and the contenders, their name didn't even leave our lips. So Bielema's experiences at Arkansas, I think, kind of speak to what you're talking about the next job that young man might want to take.
And plus, Bielema's been shooting his mouth of fresh air. I mean, getting in hot water. I don't think that style of play works in the SEC, Rick. Maybe I'm wrong, but that smash mouth, it doesn't. I mean, it works for Alabama, but I don't see it. Maybe they'll be 8-9. I don't see them ever being a contender in the SEC. I think there's too many other teams that are better than them.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. In terms of looking at the overall landscape, and who knows to what extent it could be a little bit of a beauty contest this year when you're looking at on-the-field results and how that may come into play. It's something that you had mentioned off-air. You thought would be an interesting topic of conversation. Big 12 expansion. There's a lot of politics involved in this. Who Texas wants to join, Oklahoma, some of the other teams, who they would like to have join the conference here. So who are some of the leading contenders in your mind for the spot there? BYU has been thought of as a potential joiner. They'd like to get back, I think, in a quality conference, and there's a lot that they kind of bring to the mix and their own sort of unique identity that they have. But you're even hearing some of the lesser lights out there, like Cincinnati potentially getting, thrown into the mix. So it really becomes a balancing act in terms of getting more quality into the conference without being perceived as being in a watering down type situation, I think.
Well, the thing is, a lot of people like BYU, but also they have their religious issues, and there's a lot of people would be protesting if the Big 12, if they go to the Big 12. Also, they can't play on Sundays because of their Mormon lifestyle, so they can't have football is not a problem, but the rest of the programs can. Two schools I think that are going to end up there are probably Houston. I think that's an ideal fit. I mean, I think Texas wants them there. It's going to be and I think Cincinnati is the other fit. Another team to keep an eye out is Memphis, because they have a lot of money back behind them, where they can real. It's a good market. It's a good TV market. It's a situation where Memphis might be a kind of not a sleeper team, but it's a market that I think the Big 12 would like to get themselves into.
That's very interesting. And along the topic of Houston, what I want to ask you about with that is there's been a phenomenon that I've noticed in recent years where it's really kind of like coach dependent in a lot of different situations as far as schools getting to join different conferences. Boise still hasn't been able to capitalize to join a bigger conference, but they were at least in the mix a couple of times because of Chris Peterson and whoever they had on the sidelines at the time. TCU, I think, owes it 1,000,000% to Gary Pederson being on the sidelines there, the way that he turned them around. For them to be able to join the Big 12. So it's a situation where Tom Herman, there's always going to be somebody bigger knocking at the door, trying to hire him away. They're paying him about as much as they possibly can at this point. But is it one of those situations where a deal could be about to be done, he gets hired away, and the Big 12 might get cold feet?
That's a very interesting situation. But Houston's also a big market as well. I don't think it's all based on
right.
I don't think that's the reason why he's getting into the Big 12. I don't think that's why Houston will get into the Big 12, because it's – you got to look at the overall footpoint, the TV revenue they can bring in. I mean, Herman eventually will probably leave for a better job, but I think he'll be in Houston for another year or two. Unless some surprise coach gets fired and blows him away, like let's say if the Oregon coach gets fired or some other schools out of nowhere gets fired, that could be a situation where he could jump. But Rick, I wanted to touch base on the other small conferences.
Yeah.
In the Sun Belt, I like either Arkansas State. I think Arkansas State's going to win that division, win that conference this year.
Okay.
And in Conference USA, I think watch out for Southern Miss. I mean, Southern Miss is a good team. I mean, people are high on Western Kentucky, but they lost their star quarterback Ryan Dowdy, who's going to probably make the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah. And that's always something that's going to be a factor as far as the turnover that these schools have, and that they're much more likely to come back to the pack when they suffer a loss like that. So that's a very good point as well. In terms of general or big picture predictions, feel free to go with whatever you want here as far as predictions go. I'm going to say Heisman Trophy, Baker Mayfield, because, again, I think Oklahoma is going to be in the playoffs. I think they're the team that is the most likely to make it out of the bunch, and that's going to have a lot to say about that if he's perceived as being that level of winner. To take them back for predictions here, I know you're not going to agree with a couple of these, but as far as the playoff bowls go, I'm going to say Fiesta Bowl, Florida State over Tennessee, Peach Bowl, Oklahoma over Michigan, and I'm going to say Florida State over Oklahoma in the national championship. Take it away with whatever predictions you want to make.
Well, with the Heisman, I'm going to go with Leonard Fournette. If he's the real deal and wants to play like he will, I think he's going to win the Heisman. I would have said Christian McCaffrey, but that team has just lost so many players. And if they lose three or four games, why would they give him the Heisman? Even if he has
right.
He has like a mega season. I mean, he deserves it. He should have got it last year, but how can you do that? But predictions, I think I'm going to go with LSU in one. I'm going to go with LSU Oklahoma in one of those matchups.
Do you think it's going to be somebody coming out of the Mountain West?
Possibly, if they both go undefeated. If Boise State goes undefeated, that might happen. But it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Boise State at least has a reputation, but I just don't know if these Power Five schools are ever going to make a Final Four. That's one thing to think about, Rick. Are any of these non Power Five schools ever going to be given that Final Four nod? Unless with the exception of Houston, if they finish undefeated, is anybody else ever going to get that enough reputation, enough support by the committee, which is comprised of mostly Power Five football people?
They are, but that's where the politics to me to get to be kind of interesting, because I think these are all to be an athletic director at a big school, which again, for the non-Condoleezza Rices and celebrities that are a part of this thing, it's pretty much high profile Power Five athletic directors. You got to be a great politician to be in that spot. And while they're going to look at it in terms of protecting their own base, they're also trying to keep the whole thing together, trying to keep any kind of breakaway, because there's been talk about that in recent years about possibly separating the smaller schools off. They want to keep it all together. So it would be really destabilizing, and I think they realize that. If you're going to put in, say, a two-loss Michigan or Ohio State team or a three-loss Pac-12 team over an undefeated non-Power 5 school, when we've seen how good the non-Power 5 schools can be, Houston goes out and wins there. I misspoke previously and called it a BCS Bowl before. Now it's the New Year's 6. Nevertheless, still a strong performance there. Wouldn't that be a situation where they'd be afraid to snub a smaller school? Because you could have the sounds of revolution going in the background if that happened.
But the thing is, Rick, I mean, Houston's the only team that has the strength of schedule. Boise State, I looked at Boise State's schedule. They're practically playing nobody on their schedule. So.
Right.
Houston's the only team. And I think whoever wins the Florida State-Clemson game and goes on to win the ACC championship will get that spot too. That's the fourth team I would have had. The Pac-12, I think those teams are going to be beating up each other. I think they're going to get knocked out of the Final Four 2 years in a row.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all, because they need to have somebody step up at a pretty high level there, and they really haven't had that. And until one of these schools does it, in terms of USC making this long-awaited turnaround, whether it be Chris Peterson reestablishing Washington at the Don James era level, et cetera, it's going to take one of those kind of things for that to happen, or UCLA to take this final step that they haven't taken yet under Jim Mora Jr. It's going to have to be one of those things in the next couple of years for them to get back into this conversation. Anything else we didn't talk about with this year's college season that we should, Fran?
Yeah, one prediction I want to make. I think there's going to be at least three teams with losing records in bowl games this year. First of all, Rick, as you know, in the Big Ten country, they're playing nine conference games. I don't think they're going to be able to fill all their bowl requirements again. So I think a couple of those five or seven teams are going to get into bowl games again. I think that's going to happen. And if Kevin Sumlin's going to be fired at A&M if he only wins eight games. There's so much stuff going on with that situation. So it's going to be a very interesting college football season. ESPN Goal Line is a great way to watch the games because you get the live look into all the games. I mean, you have a game in Australia to open the season this Friday. California, Hawaii, that'll be fun to watch. You have this weekend's probably one of the best weekends of college football ever with the games and the matchups and you have Georgia and North Carolina and the Georgia Dome. You have Houston, Oklahoma. That's a mega game at 12 at noon You have so many. You have even Florida State, Ole Miss, Labor Day is going to be a game. A lot of people are going to be glued to.
It's going to be a great opening weekend, and I'm going to be at one of the games myself. Not one of the games you mentioned, nor should it be, because it is not going to be a great game. But my parents' alma maters, for whatever that's worth, Ohio State and Bowling Green. So that should be very interesting. But, again, it's going to be a lot of fun this college football season. And as we continue talking football on the program and other sports as well, I want to continue to have you on. Great stuff again, my man, just like last year when you brought it. Your Houston prediction, as well as many other things you said last year, came true. I look for more of the same this time around. Thanks so much for a great segment, buddy.
Well, thanks, Greg. And I'm glad that I'm living in Raleigh now, so I'm going to be going to home games at North Carolina, NC State, and Duke this year. So I'm finally living in a college football town. No offense to Philadelphia. Temple is not a college football town. We know that, right?
No. The Northeast is renowned for many things, but not for its college football. You're in an area of the country where it's going to be very, very interesting this fall, seeing it play out with those schools. Have fun with that, my man. Look forward to talking with you subsequently on the show. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 744.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.